Well, the question's back. Are the Toronto Maple Leafs soft, or are they just playing soft right now? Their coach, Sheldon Keefe, brought it up after the game against the New York Rangers on Wednesday. They lose 6-3. They give up 5 unanswered goals, and he said, "We played soft," referring to that game. Sean, are the Toronto Maple Leafs playing soft, or are they soft?
I don't think they're soft. He also said that they played without purpose. You forgot that part of the
quote.
That's
true, too.
Made it even worse. And that's the thing that I found somewhat unusual is, A, this is a team that hasn't won in the playoffs in forever and has had that narrative kind of follow them along. They're not a playoff team. And so, ergo, they're soft because they can't play, as some of our colleagues like to call it, big boy hockey when it comes to the spring. So it's one of those things that's kind of unwritten, right? Like, we talk about all the unwritten rules of hockey. The ultimate insult to a professional hockey player is to say that they're soft. And to do it in January when the season's half over and you have you have a top six winning percentage in the league, I don't know. I mean, they're not the toughest team in the league, and New York's forecheck wore them out. But they're also without two of their best defensemen. So you'll never find me being a blue and white pom-pom waving fan on either side of this equation. As a matter of fact, they both wear blue and white. But a little harsh, I thought.
It was harsh. I thought it was warranted based on what we have been seeing from the Toronto Maple Leafs in the last week plus here, right? So, no, number one, you bring up they were without Justin Hall. They were without Jake Muzzin. They're not only two of their best defensemen, they're two of their most physical defensemen, okay? So that plays a role in it. You're leaving Ryan Reeves in front of the net. He scores 2 goals. You got to cover Ryan. I mean, like, you can't leave Ryan Reeves, let alone to score 2 goals right in front of the net, right? I mean,
you can't leave Ryan Reeves alone. He doesn't score.
I'm saying this because Ryan Reeves should never be in front of the net as an option to score. You got to have the puck when that line's on the ice. You got to have the puck. You can't let a fourth line like that out compete you, forecheck you to death like that. And you've got to do that to them. So
isn't that Ryan Reeves' job? Isn't that why he's on the ice? Isn't that the only thing that they count on him to do, is to forecheck another team into submission and to stand in front of the net and be an unmovable object?
Like, it is.
Who moves him?
It is.
Like, again, we're going to talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs. You tell me what team is taking Ryan Reeves and saying, "Oh, look at Ryan Reeves is coming in. He's going to run me through the end boards. Let me stand here and reverse check him and show him who the boss is. And then when he goes to the front of the net, I'm going to cross check him 7 times and get him the hell out of there. And maybe he won't punch me in the face." Like, what team is doing that?
Why is Ryan Reeves controlling the game? That's my point.
Because that's his job. That's what they paid him millions of dollars for. He is a big human being that controls the game physically. You outsmart him. You do not out-physical him.
No, you don't out-physical him. You do outsmart him. You're right. And that's what the Toronto Maple Leafs have to do. And they didn't do it.
But that's not soft. That's not soft. Like, that's just smart. So they played dumb. They didn't play soft. You're not going to out-physical Ryan Reeves. There's nobody in the league who can do it. That is why he is a unique weapon, just like Tom Wilson. "Oh, we're going to go stand up to Tom Wilson. Blah, 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 blah." Like, you don't do that. That's just dumb.
Correct. And I think by me saying you can't let Ryan Reeves stand in front of the net and score goals, it was misconstrued. The reason I said that is because you can't let Ryan Reeves and the Rangers' fourth line control the game when you're the Toronto Maple Leafs and you have Austin Matthews, William Nylander, Mitchell Marner, John Tavares all on the ice. You can't let the fourth line control the game. So did they play soft? Did they play weak? You can go all the way. The Rangers' fourth line was very good, but they let that happen, and it's been happening too much where the Leafs are getting up in games and they're letting the other team come back because they're not pushing. They're, as Mitchell Marner said, they're taking their foot off the gas. So for their last 5 games, they've blown multi-goal leads. They've won a few of them to come back because they're dynamic offensively, but for their last 5 games, they've blown multi-goal leads And now they do it again and they lose. And I think maybe Sheldon Keefe had just had enough. Now they were missing Muzzin and Hall, and you're probably going to be a more physical team. Well, you are going to be a more physical team with them in. But I think it was just an accumulation of what he has been seeing. He said it was different. This was a different type of game and the way it went. But the Toronto Maple Leafs in general, 2-2-1 in their last five games, have blown multi-goal leads in their last four. I think Sheldon Keefe's comments last night were an accumulation of what he has been seeing over the last week plus.
In those games, he played Colorado, top three team. Vegas, Stanley Cup contender. The Arizona game was a clunker for a number of reasons, including Veggie, the goaltender. Belmutka, he had a great game.
He was awesome. Yeah, 45 saves in that game. And by the way, we're going to talk goaltending with Kevin Woodley. I'm not to interrupt you, Sean, but I wanted to bring it in. We're going to talk goaltending with Kevin Woodley, but you're right. And then they 6-5 against St. Louis, and they played the Rangers. Is there an issue? Are we seeing the Toronto? I mean, is this
what? No issue. No issue. No? And to do what was done is going to make it an issue. You just take your lumps. We lost the game on a road to a top six team. We didn't have a good night. We got one more game on the road, and then we're going home. It's been a long trip. These things happen. We're a top six team in the league. Like, what's going to happen now? They're off today. Today's Wednesday. Today's
Thursday.
Thursday.
Yes.
Today's Thursday. I've gotten my days wrong all week. Today's Thursday. They play on Saturday on the island. So what's tomorrow going to be? Tomorrow's going to be a feeding frenzy. And now everybody has to answer for whether they're soft or not, whether these are the sins of the past coming home to roost again. Can they play in the playoffs? We're 3 months away. There's no need for any of it. My opinion.
I love it, though. Man, I think it's great. I love that, you know, a coach is going to give that candor after a game where he's not happy. So but I do agree with you, Sean. I do agree that it's not going to benefit the Toronto Maple Leafs in any way to be using words as he used after the game against the Rangers. So we'll see where it goes. Let's go to the other team that, you know, everybody wants to talk about in Canada, the Montreal Canadiens, right? I mean, Kent Hughes, new general manager, has his introductory press conference, former agent. He had clients like Patrice Bergeron, Chris Letang, Darnell Nurse. He talked about changes, how they need changes there, but he's going to take some time. You know, look, I don't know of a G, you know, did he win the press conference? Probably, you know, I mean, he was good. I think, you know, if you're a Montreal Canadiens fan, you're excited about what maybe could be coming as he talks about changes, but we got to see that he's meeting up with the team today in Las Vegas. There's a lot there. There's just so much there that they have to consider and they have to look through. And these next 2 months, as we lead into the trade deadline on March 21st, they may be one of the most interesting teams. They did not because of what they do on the ice, but what they do off the ice and how they evaluate and analyze everything that they've got, because there's a lot of change. He said changes. There's a lot of changes that need to be made there in Montreal.
Yeah, there are a lot of changes, but how's he going to make them? They're so hamstrung with the salary cap and what they've committed to and what they have and younger players that they thought were going to be good that haven't been good. And what's their real value, right? Like, what's the real value of a Nick Suzuki? What's the real value of a Cole Caulfield? Like 2 years ago when they were going, or last year when they were going to the Stanley Cup final, they were the next superstars in Montreal. And now they're average players, right? Cole Caulfield spent a lot of time in the AHL. So they need to figure out who those players are that they have, what they have in the system. I think the two things, one, I thought that Kent Hughes really handled himself well, you know, in answering a lot of questions, being very transparent. I think, you know, they've become much more transparent in the last couple of weeks, you know, and just dealing with injuries and everything that kind of was behind the scenes before is now much more open. And then the other thing is, you know, he didn't commit to anything, right? Not even Dom Ducharme.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is he your coach? Well, I need to talk to Dom. Like, he wants his own coach, right? Like, you want to talk about winning an interview. I think Dom Ducharme's going to have to blow out his interview, because I'm sure he has people in mind. But the thing that interests me the most is how he's going to deal with other teams, because he's an agent and he knows all their secrets.
Mm-hmm.
He knows how every team operates. He knows what they want, what they don't want, what their philosophy is, you know, how they negotiate. Those are all insider things, right? That are so helpful that maybe other guys that come into this situation don't have, you know, they have different things. But I think that's such a valuable currency. And you've seen it with Bill Zito. Look at the success Bill Zito's had. And he's been in the GM market for a longer time, but he started out as an agent. He was Tuukka Rask's agent way back in the day, Tim Thomas, I think, you know, and then he became an assistant GM and now he's the head man in Florida. And he's won a lot of trades so far. And, you know, in GM of the year conversation this year for the Panthers, for sure. So I'm interested to see how Kent Hughes leverages his unique skill set in this new job.
Pierre Lacroix did it with the Avalanche after being an agent. Ray Shiro did it with the Penguins after being an agent. Brian Burke, you know, was an agent too. There's a few others. So it's very interesting. But
those guys did multiple jobs before they became GMs.
True. Yes, he's going straight from the agent to the GM. Before we get to our guest, who is Kevin Woodley, correspondent with us with NHL.com and In Goal Magazine as well. We're going to have a big goalie conversation with Kevin. The thing with Kent Hughes, and I don't want to say this is a knock on Marc Bergevin, who was there before, because we loved it when Marc Bergevin was out there at the glass, hugging guys, celebrating with guys in his red jacket and all that. But Marc Bergevin fell in love with his players and gave contracts to players that maybe weren't earning those, you know, weren't deserving of those contracts, or we didn't have a big enough sample size. I think back to Dean Lombardi. They won the Stanley Cup twice in LA, right? Fell in love with players. And then those contracts looked awful, right? And maybe some things will be happening here. Like, you know, that means a tough spot for Ken Hughes and Jeff Gorton, who's the, you know, in charge of Ken Hughes' boss. I think it's a tough spot because when you're following a guy who fell in love with the players and gave contracts, now you've got to handle those contracts. And like you said at the start, what are they going to be able to do? To me, they're going to lose some trades, but they're going to have to lose some trades in order to free up the room to create what they want to do.
Yeah, but I don't know of a GM that doesn't fall in love with his players. Like, how can you not? They're your guys. Like, you found them, you went to war with them. Like, I like everybody at NHL.com, whether they're good, bad, or indifferent, because they're my guys, right? Like, we've all gone to battle together, and you see their positives and you see what they do. And so I don't know that Marc Bergevin fell in love with his players. I think he saw what he saw and wanted to reward it.
Yeah, but look at Vegas as an example, right? Great first year, not good enough. We can find somebody better. Oh, you were good? Fine. I don't care. We can find somebody better. It's a lot of that. And it's cutthroat.
How's that worked out for them?
Oh, we'll see. We'll see how it works out this season, you know?
Yeah.
But they're your guys. You invest in them. I get all that. But you also have to be smart business-wise. Like, you can't, like, was Nick Suzuki worth the contract he got at the time he got it?
No. How'd Flower work out? How'd Flower, trade and Flower work out for them?
For Vegas?
Yeah.
We'll see.
It didn't work out very well on the public relations part. It hasn't worked out very well on the goaltending part so far. Robin Lehner's not the same goalie he was.
We'll see.
Okay.
Got to win. We'll see in the spring, right? That's it. We'll see in the spring. And we'll see over the next couple of months here what Montreal does. But let's get to our guest, Kevin Woodley. We had a long interview with him, all goalie talk, which I think is the most fascinating topic in the NHL in this two-month run-up to the trade deadline. So here's that interview with Kevin Woodley. Kevin, I'm so happy to get you on the podcast, not because because you're wonderful and you're a great guest and very knowledgeable, but there's so much conversation around goalies in the National Hockey League right now. Like, I think in the next 2 months, goalies could dominate the discussion as we lead into the trade deadline. And I'm curious, from your perspective, do you look at the conversation around goaltenders and say, yeah, it's the biggest thing going right now in the NHL because of what teams need and how important that position is?
It should always be the biggest thing going around the conversation around hockey, right? It's the most important position. Don't they always tell us that? It's interesting because, like, it's just such a weird year, right? Like, is it different? Like, we've got some teams that are contenders that have questions. We've got a name that's headed to the Hall of Fame in Marc-Andre Fleury, who's got an expiring contract. So you're going to hear that a lot. And, like, who wouldn't want Marc-Andre Fleury in their locker room and backstopping their team in the postseason? So, and then at the same time, like, we've had a record number of goaltenders get into games. Like, there's so many options that, you know, you might be tempted to look at that you know, in normal seasons, probably haven't even played a game by now. Like, look at Charlie Lindgren. He didn't even get into a game for the Montreal Canadiens last year. He's got a 9.58. He's 5-0 in his five appearances. Tiny sample and all. But when you talk to him, he feels like, you know, and this is often the case with the quote-unquote late bloomer. It's a new goalie coach, maybe a new, whether it's technique or tactic or mindset or approach. It just, for some guys, it'll unlock something later in their career. And as much as a lot of people look at a guy like Charlie Lindgren and say, wow, it's only five games, well, there are others that are, you talk to him and you're like, yeah, maybe he's figured something out here. Is he the next Jordan Binnington? So I just think there's so many more names out there in this conversation that's part of it, right? It's a year of uncertainty. And if you're the St. Louis Blues, again, just to use Lindgren as the, you know, most obvious example, because he's got a 9.58, like, are you giving up on your depth in a year where goaltending depth has never been more important? Are you getting rid of that insurance policy? I would suggest it probably takes a pretty good offer to do so. So, yeah, there's just so many different ways you could take that. There's so many options, and yet it all probably comes back to, if the dominoes are going to start to fall, what happens with Marc-Andre Fleury?
And on the other side, if the dominoes are going to start to fall, I would think that the Edmonton Oilers are going to be one of the first ones in line. Is their goalie situation salvageable, or do they have to go out and do something?
This is a tough one because I think Mike Smith can be the answer there. And maybe that's just me doubling down on an opinion that hasn't, you know, borne fruit so far this year. Like, I looked at Mike Smith's last year. And again, we talk about unlocking things at various stages of your career. Like, I knew the work he did and the changes he made in the offseason were, like, very tangible in terms of the way he moved, the way he held his stance, a lot of, like, right down to biomechanics stuff, like you're breaking down a golf swing in slow motion video. And when you watch the changes he made and how he applied them on the ice last year, I mean, you didn't see him spread out and, you know, flopped forward. We used to call it the Luongo flop here in Vancouver, like balanced over his knees. There was so much, like, he's such a big body and he's got so much talent. If he can stay balanced and moving around his crease without getting, you know, pitched forward and out of control early, like, the sky's the limit. And we saw that last year. He gave them top 10 goaltending, and I thought he'd be able to repeat it. I didn't see it as a blip. Injuries, birth certificate, he's going to be 40. Like, all those questions that I probably overlooked a little too much when I was looking preseason that other people were pointing to have kind of all come to fruition. So the problem for the Oilers is Mikko Koskinen is fine in that 1B role. As soon as you need him to be a 1, the wheels, I don't want to say fall off, but, you know, some of the, he leads the league in low percentage goals against this year with 16. That's not good. I think Stuart Skinner is an NHL goaltender. I think he's made huge strides in the last year, and he's ready for the National Hockey League. But ready to carry a middling defensive team to be a number 1, like, that's a different ask. So, I still think Mike Smith could be that guy, but there's a lot of risk that comes with that. So I understand where the panic is and where the, you know, that sense of urgency is. Do we go and get someone? The problem is when you're that team defensively, and I look at the advanced numbers I have access to, some of them proprietary from Steven Valiquette, and they're like, you know, 17 to 20 in most of the stats that matter to me defensively. The only way you're propping that up is with top 10 goaltending. 2 years ago, they got top 10 goaltending from Mikko Koskinen. A lot of people forget that when you adjust the numbers. Last year, they got it from Mike Smith. They haven't got it from either guy. When you look at the list of where do we fix this if we're the Edmonton Oilers, it's pretty short. It's Mike Smith finds last year's form, or you get a guy like Marc-Andre Fleury. Like, the other names carry a lot of uncertainty. There are very few sort of like, if you get this guy, he can fix the Oilers. Outside of maybe someone like Flower. And do we even know if Marc-Andre Fleury would consider a move like that, especially if your other option, and I heard it rumored today, is Colorado. Like, if I'm making that choice and I'm Marc-Andre Fleury, I know which team I look at as a true contender and I'm picking to finish my season with if I'm moving my family and uprooting everything, and it's probably not the one north of the border.
Well, yeah, and you bring up a lot of good points there, but and I definitely wanted to get to Colorado, but I wanted to just play off that because I 100% agree with you there. Marc-Andre Fleury is in control here. He's got a no move clause, right? It makes no sense for the Chicago Blackhawks to keep him. That there's no reason for that, right? They can even retain some salary to sweeten the pot here to get a better deal for themselves. But if you're Marc-Andre Fleury, and you mention it, the middling defensive team, right? That the Oilers are a team, and I still can't figure out why we all just, and I'm as guilty as anyone at the start of this season, You see him jump off to a 16-5 start, and you're like, oh my God, the world beaters, right? But their power play is incredible. But the Oilers, they have incredible top-end scoring. They lack secondary scoring. They're not great defensively, and they don't have good goaltending. Why do we assume that they should be a playoff team? And why do we assume that just if Marc-Andre Fleury were to go over there and play, do we say, well, all of a sudden now they're just that, well, now they're going to be great, right? Like, I don't understand that philosophy. And if I'm Marc-Andre Fleury, I'm looking around and going, is that the team that I want to hitch my wagon to this season when I may want another big deal, or I may want another contract in the National Hockey League for a multi-year deal? Is that where I want to go? So I think there's a lot of questions there of, can the Oilers even get the guy that they want based on how they play?
And the thing about, like, again, I think one of the reasons that we have those expectations of the Oilers is because, and again, a lot of people have ripped on the goaltending, but the reality of the past two seasons is the goaltending propped up a team that was bottom third, or at least bottom half to bottom third of the National Hockey League in terms of defensive metrics. Like, they just have not been a good defensive team. They have leaned more heavily than I think a lot of people realize on their goaltending. And because it's Koskinen and because it's Smith, I don't know that enough people have recognized how good their adjusted numbers have been. Koskinen 2 years ago and Smith last season. So the one thing I'll say to that, though, is, like, Fleury's the one guy that could prop them up, because the other team that I don't think the reputation or the narrative matches the reality, at least last season, in terms of how good or not good they are defensively, was the Vegas Golden Knights. Like, Marc-Andre Fleury was full value for that Vezina Trophy because of what he did behind a team that gave up a lot of great A's, gave up a lot of really good looks, despite having a really good roster and being a really good team overall. Like, it's just the way they played. And he bailed them out. Like, that, I remember in the first, like, Minnesota arguably should have won that series, especially 5-on-5. Marc-Andre Fleury in the first four games of that playoff series was like 10 goals above expected saved. Like, him in the first four games, especially remember the first one, like, just grade A after grade A, and Flower bailing them out. Like, there are very few guys that can perform at that level behind that type of team. And that is why I actually do kind of see a fit in Edmonton. Like, there aren't many guys that can sort of get you by with that goaltending. He's one of the few, and that's one of the few series where a team that low defensively has sort of won a first round. But you're right. Like, if my choice, if I'm Fleury, and first of all, he's earned the right to decide not to move at all. And top of my head, I apologize, don't have what his no move status is. But, like, if he decides his family wants to stay in Chicago, if anybody's earned that right at this point in their career, it's Marc-Andre Fleury. But if the options really are, if they really do become Colorado or Edmonton, like, I know which one I'm choosing, and not just because I think we all want to see Colorado-Vegas in the final, or in the Western final with Marc-Andre Fleury in the Avs net. Like, sign me up for that every time, please, and thank you.
I want to get to Colorado, but just a real quick follow-up on Marc-Andre. Is he, you've talked to him a lot, is he one of those, some goalies like that. Some goalies like not a lot of defense, right? They want to be in the fray. They want to be the guy when it's all over, you say, well, that team was no good, but what about that goalie? Right, they thrive on the action. They throw. Is Mark one of those guys? He strikes me in the few conversations I've had that he is.
Yeah, and I think every that's why we love the position, right? The chance to be the difference maker. Like, every goalie's going to tell you that, hey, like, give me a good defensive team every time. Sort of flip that question on its ear a little bit. Like, I do think he thrives in that environment. The reverse question that the Colorado Avalanche have to ask themselves is he a guy who can play behind a team that is better defensively, that it's not just the quality of chances? And the Avs are really good defensively, have been a couple of seasons now. They don't give up a ton, especially high danger stuff. Is he a guy who, because he's so energetic, he's so active in terms of how he plays the game, can he make an adjustment to playing behind a team where he's not as busy? It's counterintuitive, right? You would think every goalie would be like, yeah, sign me up for a team that plays really good defense. But not everybody can play behind a team where, you know, they're dominating possession. They're in the other end for 2-3 minutes of a time at a time. They don't get those easy shots. They don't feel the puck. Like, some guys lose their rhythm. Some guys lose their timing. I talked to Pekka Rinne the other day. We were talking about this as he gets prepared for his retirement ceremony later this month. And that was one of his biggest adjustments in his career, when the Preds became sort of a team that didn't give up a lot of shots. How do I stay engaged in the game? And for him, it was puck handling. Some guys don't find those answers and they struggle in that environment. You know, Flower's been busy for a long time now. Like, he's been a goalie that's thrived in a busy environment, and he hasn't had to really be a guy that, you know, has to play behind a sort of a low shot or just not a busy environment. And it's a question you probably got to ask yourself if you're the Avs before you make that move. How much of an adjustment is that for him?
That's a question I hadn't even thought of, which is another reason why we have you on the podcast, to give us that insight, because I hadn't even thought of that as an option to even consider, but it makes a lot of sense. But if you're Colorado, so let's get there. Does it have to be a guy like Marc-Andre Fleury, who we all would assume would go in and play over Darcy Kemper? Or does it have to be a guy, or could it be a guy like a Yunus Korpisalo, who could go in and fight for playing time with Darcy Kemper? You see the difference there. I mean, what does Colorado need? Is Kemper a guy that would thrive in a competitive role with his goalie partner?
Well, I mean, Antti Raanta was, you know, when healthy, exceptional in Arizona, right? And when they were at their best, you know, I don't know what the dynamic was in the locker room or pushing each other. Like, I don't think Darcy Kemper's a guy who's going to shy away from competition, right? And, you know, this is the other answer. Like, we're all assuming Colorado needs help. Like, there's an adjustment period here in terms of going to a new team, a new system. And again, a team that doesn't give up a ton isn't always easy to play behind. And, you know, I still think Darcy Kemper's capable of being the answer, even if the numbers haven't been what a lot of people would have expected or liked to this point. The other guy that I think gets missed in this conversation, and I understand why, like, it hasn't been a great year, but I had to do Ducks radio post game last night, and so I watched the whole game, and he had a shutout, and so obviously recency bias in terms of my eyes, but like, I was a huge Pavel Francouz guy up until the playoffs 2 years ago. And when you watched him during the season, the year that he sort of had his breakout alongside Philip Grubauer, I think we forget that, like, this is a guy that was pushing for playing time at times ahead of Philip Grubauer in Colorado. He's kind of got a UC Saros quality to him. Like, it wouldn't be fair to call him a poor man's UC Saros, but, like, in terms of the way he plays, he just very patient on his skates, holds his edges, doesn't sort of retreat in the face of rushes. Like, there's a lot of qualities in his game that I thought really lend themselves to sort of the new style of attacking and the new style of offense in the National Hockey League. And he's a guy that I had predicted for success. Well, he goes into the playoffs. Grubauer gets hurt. He goes in. He was terrible. He looked nothing like the goaltender I watched all season. So I got to think that was related to the injury that ultimately takes him out. He misses an entire year. He's been slow to start this season, but again, he missed an entire year. Like, I knew a lot of teams that liked him before he recommitted to Colorado. And then we had the injuries, and then we had all this. But if he can get back to the guy of two seasons ago, before the injury, before the playoffs, is he not, like, they might have an option there that I think a lot of us are overlooking. And that's why I think of a Marc-Andre Fleury, because I'm not sure that going out and getting a Yunus Korpisalo is necessarily that big. I mean, statistically it's not, but it's necessarily that big an upgrade on what they have behind Darcy Kemper right now and Pavel Francouz, especially if you believe that the playoff troubles 2 years ago were not a mental thing, were not the moment being too big for him, were just strictly tied to the injury that ultimately took him out. And you're seeing signs, and the goalie coach is seeing signs behind the scenes more than I get to see, that this guy is getting back to that level and rediscovering the timing that made him a goalie I know other teams around the league coveted a couple of years ago.
Yeah, to me, if you get to the playoffs, if they start in the next couple of weeks, I think they have, Bednar has a really tough decision. I think, especially lately, Pavel's shown that he can be that guy again. So, but there's not that huge sample size behind it, but there really isn't for Darcy either. Like, these are two guys that don't have playoffs, but you mentioned injuries and being out for a long time. The one I wanted to ask you about is Tuukka Rask is back. He had a good first game, not so good a second game against a wagon of a team in Carolina, 5 goals in the first period. But just in general, with the surgery he had on his hip and everything that goes into that, are we discounting how difficult what he's trying to do is?
I mean, I guess it depends on how his body's reacted to the surgery. And I haven't had that conversation with him. I haven't paid as close attention as I probably should have to his answers to those questions. But by all accounts, you know, obviously, when Boston was in here, had a little chat with Bob Asenza. He's sort of moving and feeling like vintage Tuukka Rask. And So I think the question becomes, how long does it take him to get up to speed? And it's almost like a player, you know, we talk about missing training camp or missing the start of the season, and it's really hard to jump back in the middle because everything's faster than it was in October. Like once we get to this point of the year, there is an element of that as a goaltender to sort of catch up to the play and the speed of it. I mean, it's not like the hardest part of the job is finding the puck and anticipating where it's going when there's 10 bodies moving around the ice with speed. Like it's not an easy thing to sort of just the processing and the mental and the reads and all that goes into it. I don't think you snap your fingers and you're ready to go. I think the idea they had of getting him into some games in the American Hockey League was a good one. It just didn't pan out on the conditioning stint because the games were postponed. So I think you're going to have to be patient as the sort of the processing side of the game. He catches up to that, the speed of the game. But if physically he feels fine, I mean, the track record is there. He's going to get there. And I don't know. I surely wouldn't judge him based on the call. I mean, let's be honest. The Carolina has made a lot of Vezina candidates look very average in recent weeks. So, you know, I just happened to watch Vancouver go through and, you know, Demko looked like he was getting himself into that conversation. And, oh, no, here comes Florida and Carolina and forget all that talk, right? Like, they make a lot of goalies look normal or very average. So I think it's just a matter of time with Tuukka. If physically he's telling you he feels fine, you just have to have a little patience with the reads and the timing. And once he gets that back, because he's a goalie that relies on it, right? Like, he's not a technician per se. He's a goalie that plays with a lot of flow. You watch him move around his crease. He'll back into lanes, you know, sort of that reverse C cut, a little more drift in his game. His game is very cerebral and read reliant. And goalies like that tend to ride a little more highs and lows because they rely on rhythm. They rely on timing more than a pure, you know, spot to spot technician. But Tuukka's been one of the best in the game for so long at playing that way. It's just a style that might take a little longer to get comfortable with jumping into the middle of a season after missing that long.
You mentioned, I mean, Carolina, Florida, Tampa, anybody that rolls through those three teams right now, like the teams that are, they're just getting crushed. You know, like if you go into those three, those trips, I mean, Vancouver, right? Calgary did it too. You just get crushed by those teams. They are that good. You brought up Demko. Though, and you wrote about Demko recently for us at NHL.com. Bruce Boudreau said he reminds him of Braden Holtby when he had Braden Holtby, and he reminds him of John Gibson. So that's a couple of good, I mean, one's a Vezina Trophy guy. Another one's one of the top goalies in the league for a while now, just kind of hidden a little bit. Does Demko remind you of those two guys in particular, or is there somebody else that he reminds you of? And just, I guess, how good can this guy be for Vancouver?
Yeah, you know what? I've never thought of comparisons for Thatcher. I'll tell you this. He's better technically than both those guys were at the stages Bruce had them. You know, especially Holtby. And Holtby will tell you that because he came here last year and was sort of, there were things that Thatcher does technically that Braden's body just wouldn't let him do. Like, just, that's just the reality. I mean, Demko, 6'4". He's almost violent in his movements in the crease, and there's some similarities to Markstrom there. Whereas you watch an Igor Shesterkin, who, by the way, would be my Vezina Trophy pick right now, hands down, far and away. And he moves around, like, I think the phrase I got on him was like a hovercraft out there. Like, he actually skates while he's on his knees in the butterfly. It's incredible. Whereas Demko is all like just like from spot to spot, pushing around in a T-push. It reminds me of Markstrom. Like, there's a level of violence to it. Like, it's just so fast. His pace over the past 2 years has picked up to the point where he's almost never behind on a play. A couple times on that recent Florida trip, but A, like you said, it's the Florida-Carolina gauntlet, and he hadn't played in 10 days, and his timing and that all sort of fell off a little bit. I think the sky's the limit on this guy. I think that by the time we would have gotten to the Olympics, he would have had himself in that conversation, not just to be on that team, but to play ahead of some of the big names on that team. I'm probably biased because I watch him every day and I've watched the progression. He came out of college as a guy who, you know, frankly, when the Canucks drafted him, his technique was average at best. Like, it was really kind of meh. He was playing on one hip. He had the double hip surgery. You saw it, and you see now just where he's at physically. He's got the size. He's got the speed. He's got the reactive elements. And now he's added this technical foundation that he believes in. That's the biggest thing, right? Like, not everybody has to play that way. Not everybody can play that way, but he believes in it. And so, you know, he may not end up in that Vezina conversation this year. He's adjusting right now. That's the one thing that the Canucks still give up chances. but they get way more offense at the other end. He used to be busy all the time. Like, there wasn't a night off. Now he goes through stretches where he doesn't see a shot for 3-4 minutes, and all of a sudden it's a 2-on-1 or a breakaway, and he's got some of the best numbers in the NHL on both of those types of chances. So there's an adjustment mentally for him right now. I just, like, he's got the psychology degree. He's a guy that ever since I saw him out of college, like, he used to take notes when he watched NHL Live. Like, he would make notes on how the goalies were playing. But he's a goalie geek. And so I obviously am biased. I love him for that, that he's always looking for ways to get better. He's got a great relationship with the goalie coach here, who's got a track record of his own with Bobrovsky and 2 Vezina trophies there. And I just see them continuing to build. As a matter of fact, like, even this year, like he doesn't, he went into it, it's like, there's not changes to be made. There weren't big steps that needed to happen for Thatcher Demko. Technically, physically, he's there. It was just a matter of new situations, travel, number one, more games, mentally adjusting to a new coach now. Those types of experience-based things, as he adds those, I think he's going to be in that conversation, not just soon, but for a long time.
You mentioned Bobrovsky. Is this a run, or is this the Vezina Trophy Bob back?
I think we had Vezina Trophy Bob back at the beginning. I think statistically it's fallen off a little bit in the last month or so. Like, they haven't gotten the same level of performances out of Bob. Like, and that's just looking at the numbers. He sure looks like the same guy now. Like, you watch him move around the crease, really tough to beat down low, as fast as anyone, sort of post to post and scrambling without having to scramble in terms of diving. Like, just, you know, kind of like Shesterkin in that he's never out of a play, but he doesn't have to go head first on anything, right? Like, he's always sort of technically pushing across, getting a pad sealed, staying balanced as he moves. He's got that explosiveness. It's just, you know, as we've watched the numbers sort of slip here over the last 3 weeks, I think you still have that question in your back of your mind because of the last 2 weeks. Like, you know, it was easy to look at his first couple of months and be like, oh, he's back. But you want to see it over a longer sample. So I'd be honest with you, like, I haven't had a chance to really catch up with Rob Tallis and get a good understanding of what they've changed this year, because they have made some changes. But Bob's in here on Friday. They're playing in Edmonton tonight. And I'm actually hoping to just dig in a little bit when they arrive. And I guess that's my way of saying I probably have a better answer for you next week. But right now, at least statistically, I don't know that I'm willing to say he's back to that level, but he's certainly back to a much better level than he was the past couple of seasons. That's good news for the Florida Panthers.
And we'll see what he is in the playoffs too. I mean, that's...
It's always been a question, yeah.
That's always the question with Bobrovsky. All right, I wanted to ask you again. I wanted to go back to the Marc-Andre Fleury conversation, but change it a little bit, because you mentioned how great it would be to see Marc-Andre Fleury, if he moves to the Avalanche, have that Western Conference final against the Vegas Golden Knights. I'll give you a better one. Marc-Andre Fleury playing for the Washington Capitals against the Pittsburgh Penguins in the Stanley Cup playoffs in the first round. Does Washington need Marc-Andre Fleury? Does Washington need better goaltending? Or is Ilya Samsonov and Vitek Vanacek, are they good enough for a team that really the window is open, but how long is it going to stay open with Ovechkin and Backstrom and these guys? I mean, you'd want it to stay open for a few more years. Is Samsonov or Vanacek, are either of those guys ready now?
Vanacek's been better than Samsonov from, you know, again, looking at the numbers. And this is the tough thing, right? Like, I'm in Vancouver. Nobody can watch every game. And that's why I lean on a company like Clearsight Analytics, because they add the context of shot quality. Like, I don't care who you are, you can't watch every goalie and just watch them and actually make a comparison, right? Like, you, shot quality. There's been nights where I've watched the Vancouver Canucks as closely as anyone, and the whole narrative in Vancouver will be, oh man, they, like, even the other night in Nashville, they really outplayed them because they were rope-a-doping them. The puck was moving around the outside, and you're like, wow, like, this is a really good possession game for the Canucks. They got lots of chances. I look it up the next day, and Nashville had 11 high danger, and Vancouver had 4. Like, sometimes our eyes lie to us in terms of what actually matters when it comes to scoring. So that's why I lean on these numbers. And right now, Vanacek has been better than Samsonov. Ilya just hasn't seemed to be able to sort of grab the mantle that was, you know, supposed to be handed to him. And so I think it is fair to ask those questions at this point, because what you have in Washington, I mean, we all know the sort of the narratives and the storylines and the aging core, but what you also have is a really good defensive team. And the goaltending results have just been kind of hovered around expected. And typically you need better than that. But in terms of the defensive environment, like, it's a good one for goaltending. It's also a good one typically for playoff success. And they haven't been able to sort of have that. And so I think it is a fair question. They've both kind of just given you good enough. They've been right around expected, but typically you need a little more than that come playoffs. So I hadn't thought of the concept of a Flurry there. Again, like a move to Colorado, there would be an adjustment. He'd be a lot less busy there. This is a, you know, a sort of more passive's the wrong word. It's just not a, it's not a high event defensive environment. You're not as busy. And so you have to adjust to those types of things. But yeah, I think it's fair to say that an upgrade there might be something that if you're the Capitals, you'd have to consider. Again, you don't, it's almost like they don't need goaltending as much because they're creating this good defensive environment. They've got, you know, just above expected, which is not bad, but yeah, you know, like an upgrade would be tempting.
Give us a goalie who's not on the radar that people should be watching.
Oh, I wasn't prepared for this one. I usually do this preseason, and my guy was Francouz because I thought he'd slipped off the radar for enough people that I thought I could have that as my preseason, you know, sort of dark horse. Veggie. They call him Veggie. I'm going with Veggie. And I'll be honest, there's another one I'd like to dig into because there's a story there. Like, this guy came out of nowhere. Like, you know, like, so, and a tough one to sort of analyze because how do you judge somebody playing behind that team? Like, with all due respect to the Arizona Coyotes, not a super friendly goaltending environment, right? And there's nights where they've just gotten pounded. And so his numbers take a hit because eventually, you know, the dam cracks, right? Like, I don't care how good you are. And then there's been other nights where you watch him and they've given him a chance and he's given them a chance, like just been brilliant, the game against the Leafs. And so, but if you're Arizona and you've got that found money, and you know, at some point you need to start turning this around. Like, are you parting with that? Are you allowing that found money to just sail away to someone else? So, yeah, he's been a really good story. I think you're right, that's overlooked. I would go back to a guy like Charlie Lindgren. Like, if we're looking for that sort of, you know, really off the radar, you know, guy that is not even in the league right now, maybe people aren't looking at. But again, if you're a playoff team, are you hitching your wagon to somebody who hasn't had that opportunity before? Yeah, the other one is, you know, like Korpisalo's name keeps coming up, right? He's had hot streaks before. You know, his adjusted numbers kind of, they're middling. We talked about Washington, like his numbers are above expected. When I watch him play, there are elements of his game that I always watch Korpisalo play, and I watch the patience off the release, the fact he doesn't default down prematurely and then react out. Like, he holds his edges very well for such a big goaltender. He moves very well. Like, I always feel like there should be more there. And so maybe there are other teams around the league that look at the skill set and think they can be the ones that unlock it. And we saw it against Toronto when Columbus upset the Maple Leafs. Like, what do you have, like a 970 something in that playoff series? Like, he's capable of it. So if he were to go somewhere and get on that type of run, he may not have been the first name I would have picked based on statistics, but he's done it before. And sometimes that matters just from a confidence and mindset standpoint. And would I be shocked if he went and did it again? Not at all.
We were going to let you go, but I got to ask you one more question. And
well, I sat on the fence so bad. Like, what, Sean asked me for a name and I gave him five. So like, that
you
is
gave
like,
him five. It's all right.
I sat on the fence hard there. I'm actually a little sore.
All right. So don't sit on the fence right here. All right. Over your right shoulder, nobody can see it right now, but over your right shoulder is a jersey. It's Carey Price, right? They got a new GM. He has to restart his rehab right now. Give me the prediction on Carey Price. What is your prediction on Carey Price? Will we see him this season, or will he ever play for the Montreal Canadiens again?
I can't. Like, I don't have an answer. I'd love to get off the fence for you on this one, Dan. And I think this one's different because of the personal side of it, right? Like, mm-hmm. Nothing matters. None of the hockey side matters. I hate to say it, but, and maybe this is a bias here too, because I've had a chance to be on the ice with Carey in the summers, watch him work with kids at camps and see some of the work he does and see the impact he has, especially on the First Nations community. And I care only about Carey Price the person first and foremost, right? But if Carey Price the person is good and Carey Price the person wants to go back to being Carey Price the goalie, with those caveats in place, I'm really curious to see how this plays out. even this year, like, it seems like impossible that he could be an option for this year. But if he wanted to, like, nobody that I've ever seen before goes from zero to superstar faster than Carey Price. I mean, we've seen it in the last couple of playoffs, right? Like, when the pause was on, not only did he, like, he went down to Washington State, which where his wife's family is from. We had him on a webinar for InGoal. We did an InGoal in-person webinar with Carey. And, like, he was great answering questions from the kids. Like, he's just, like, he's so good in that environment. But he hadn't, like, he was barely skating. He hadn't seen a shot till he got back to Montreal for training camp. And then he went and had that playoff with, like, no buildup, no sort of, like, what, they had one game and they were in. You saw him last year. Not ideal circumstances, but concussion, doesn't play. Plays, what, 40 minutes in the American Hockey League, goes into the playoffs and backstops into the Cup Final. Like, the ability to go from not playing at all to Carey Price is unique to Carey Price. Like, most guys, we talked about Rask, he's going to need some time. Like, Carey just, you know, there are few that can do that the way Carey does. And so if he decides, if everything else is good and he decides he wants to play, like, he's one of the only guys in the league that I'd be like, yeah, absolutely. I'd hitch my team to that wagon. I would have done it if I was Team Canada at the Olympics, and that was something he decided he wanted to do if NHL players were going. So, like, I would never count out Carey Price. As far as whether it's with the Habs or not, that's a question I can't answer. I don't know where his mindset is. He's committed to that franchise for so long. I do believe that at some level, despite what was said afterwards, there was not just more than just a willingness to go to Seattle, knowing his ties to the Pacific Northwest and how much he loves it there, how much of his time he spends in that area in the off season. I think that would have been a nice fit for him. Does that show a willingness to maybe move on from Montreal that wasn't there before? I feel like he deserves the respect of answering that himself rather than me speculating. But if he decided to, and he wanted to, and he said he was healthy, and I'm a team, I would hesitate not for a second to invest in Carey Price, because nobody comes back faster than him.
I have 964 more questions now, but I'm going to eat them all, and we're going to let you go and get on with your day. I know you have a busy day, but as always, thanks for stopping by and sharing your goalie knowledge with us, not only here, but with Unmasked on NHL.com. It is a resource which more people should take advantage of.
Thanks for having me. And if you just jot down a few of those 964, Sean, because I need some ideas for upcoming columns here.
Thanks a lot, Kevin. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Sean, you said you have, I think the number was 694 more questions for Kevin. I have 1,000 more questions for Kevin. I could talk to him all day long because of his knowledge of goaltending and just how fascinated I am with a position I know nothing about, really. Like, let's be honest. He knows so much more about goaltending than I do. You know more about goaltending than I do, I'll actually say.
Well, Dan, if you want to talk to Kevin all day, just call him instead of texting him and lay out about 3 hours.
That's
and
true.
Then you'll be good. But you'll be so much smarter when it's over and you'll turn on the games and you'll be like, oh, look, Kevin told me that. And then you'll be like, you can go on Twitter and pretend that you know it. And then people will be like, oh, Dan knows that. Look what I learned from Dan today.
Yeah, I can fake it like the best of them. But you mentioned Bill Zito before we got to the interview with Kevin Woodley about, you know, how he's won a lot of trades. And we talked about Sergei Bobrovsky with Kevin. And let's talk about the Florida Panthers. I got a question about them in my mailbag that ran Wednesday. And it's about what do we think the Panthers could do, you know, as the deadline approaches 2 months to the deadline, 2 months, actually Friday would be 2 months. We're recording this on Thursday. And I looked at their defense, you know, and I said, well, I mean, look, this team's a juggernaut offensively, and you're obviously not going to mess with their goaltending. And I looked at their defense and I looked at a player in Dallas and I'm like, man, wouldn't John Klingberg look really good with the Florida Panthers? Now he would look good with a lot of teams, Sean, but right shot defenseman, you could put him on your second pair because Uyghur and Ekblad are real good top pair. And they're a team that should be in the go for it mode. And I don't know that Dallas is going to be in the mix. Well, enough in the mix to keep Klingberg unless they're going to re-sign him to a long-term contract. And I think that could make Klingberg available. And I look at it and there's a lot of teams that could use a John Klingberg. He could be one of the biggest skaters out there. Meaning not non-goalies, that's a could be available. And I think Florida could be a perfect landing spot for Klingberg.
Like, he's remade this whole roster. They actually have a really nice defense, in my opinion, right? Like, you look at it, they got physical elements. Ekblad should be in the conversation for the Norris Trophy. I told you at the beginning of the year that Mackenzie Weegar was going to be better than Ekblad. I was wrong, but not by much. Like, he's been really good. They each play over 23 minutes. Everything else is spread out pretty well until you get down to their number six. Sure, Klingberg could help them, but what are they going to give up, right? And I think there's other teams that are going to be involved in that conversation. I think Carolina is going to be involved. I don't know if Colorado needs another D, but they're going to be involved in everything. Boston might be involved. They certainly need some defensive help. So the price is going to be really high. I think he's going to come onto the market, Klingberg. I think that might be a rift that can't be patched over. And if they do, Dallas is going to get a king's ransom. And I don't know if I'm Florida, if I'm messing with the chemistry I have right now.
Well, that's the question. And it's a very fair question because you do have good chemistry, but I just looked at it from a depth standpoint of what you'd be getting, an experience standpoint as well. A guy who's played in the Stanley Cup final, albeit in the bubble, right? And just another guy who can be a two-way threat for you and be an offensive threat for you. And yeah, you probably there is good chemistry there and the cost. You have to associate all those things together. I get that. But I just look at it from a depth standpoint, and I say, if I can move Radko Gudas to my third pair and have John Klingberg on my second pair, man, I'm looking a lot better as I go against Tampa, Carolina, Toronto. We'll see who else is in the mix there in that Eastern Conference, which we know the top eight, is a pretty good juggernaut there.
Yeah, but it's the same thing that Vegas is going to face in a couple of weeks, or maybe a couple of months, or maybe a year. It depends on who you ask for the timeline. It changes every time you turn around. The owner says, oh, he'll be back in a couple of weeks. The next day, the board comes out, it's going to be 2 months. And it was 3 to 5 months originally when Eichel had the surgery. But when he comes back, there's some hard, hard questions. You keep saying, we'll see about Vegas. We don't know who Vegas is, because the team when Eichel comes back is going to be completely different than the team they have right now. They can't fit Eichel under the cap, and they're going to have to make moves. And if you're going to bring Klingberg in, you're not going to fit under the cap if you're a good team, because you're close to the cap now, unless you're doing some sort of magic. So you're going to have to tear apart your team. To me, and I know there's an argument with Super 16, to me right now, and I'm just throwing out the Calgary loss because it is what it is, right? Calgary wanted to beat them after the way they got manhandled in Florida. Florida hasn't been good on the road. They were coming off of a long layoff where they went to Banff and did some dog sledding and, clearly were having some fun. To me, they're the best team in hockey right now. Like, they can do everything. They got good goaltending. They can put up 9 on you, right? Like, to me, Barkov is one of the best players in the league. He's not even the best player on his team. Jonathan Huberdeau should be in the MVP conversation. They go 4 lines deep. A Stanley Cup winner and Patrick Hornquist is playing on their 4th line. Like, they're a really, 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 really good team, and they're deep. Like, it's not, oh, my God, they got to keep these 18 players together and they're going to be good. If they don't, there's going to be a huge fall off. They go a little deeper than that.
Yeah, we had this argument last week. Well, I wouldn't call it an argument. We had a disagreement last week on who's number one. You had Florida again this week in your Super 16, which is on NHL.com right now. I had Tampa again. I still think Tampa is the best team in the National Hockey League. And look, I mean, I think you can make arguments for Colorado. I think you make arguments for Carolina, Florida, and Tampa. And you wouldn't necessarily be wrong with how you argue. Those four to me are clear top four right now. I went Tampa institutional. I go Tampa again. Institutional knowledge. They keep winning. They just won with 4 defensemen, which is remarkable. But those 4 defensemen were pretty. I mean, Cal Foote, I think, played 25 minutes in that game and looked pretty good against LA. They keep winning. Great goaltending. Stamkos is having a terrific year. Victor Hedman leads all defensemen in points. So I keep going Tampa. But again, Sean, I'm not going to sit here and say you're wrong with the Florida Panthers, because you're right. They're an exceptional hockey team right now. I think they can be better. I think that they can make an addition to have better depth on defense and have another guy that they can trust to run power play and do all those types of things if need be. And that guy's John Klingberg. He's the guy that I'm going to go out. And if I'm Bill Zito, I'm saying that's the target for me.
Well, you're making a fantasy trade and not a real trade because there's money and there's prospects and everything else. But let's just backtrack for 1 second. When we decide who the Norris Trophy winner is this year, that Victor Hedman performance against the Los Angeles Kings is exhibit one. You can put Cale Makar out there and he's having a fantastic season and an offensive season of the likes of we have not seen in maybe ever, right? And you can put Fox out there, really good, has won the Norris Trophy. You take that game against the Kings, 30-plus minutes, 3 points. He just did everything. Like, they weren't even nervous. Like, Cooper's like, yeah, 4D. I got McDonough, and I got Hedman. Let's go. I'll roll like this all year. So, to me, that's Hedman, and that's why he's the Norris Trophy winner right now.
All right, but I wouldn't sleep. I would not discount what Cale Makar does when he doesn't have the puck either. So let's Kevin brought it up, how good they are defensively, right? That's Cale Makar plays a role in that too. A couple other things before we get out of here. The schedule release is out, so there's games that are being made up through February. What was the Olympic break? I just encourage you to go check your team's schedule, see who, where, when and where they're playing and who they're playing, because you got additional games there. Credit to Steve Hatzepetros from the NHL for doing that. I mean, I can't imagine the task at hand to be able to reschedule all these games. And Willie O'Ree, Sean, Willie O'Ree, who we talked about last week, got his number 22 retired by the Boston Bruins. He unfortunately couldn't be there because, you know, of obvious COVID concerns. He was there virtually from his home, actually his daughter's home, I think it was, in San Diego. But then on top of that, Willie O'Ree is being honored with the Congressional Gold Medal. What a week for Willie O'Ree.
Yeah, that doesn't stink. The Congressional Gold Medal, that's a nice little trinket to have. Hey, check this out.
Nice little necklace.
Check this out. Somebody gave me this. It's the Congressional Gold Medal. The debate on the floor, like, I actually watched C-SPAN for a couple of minutes so I can add that to my resume of things that I've never done before and now have. Unbelievable. The ceremony was unbelievable. And I'll tell you what, I'm a big hat guy. You got the toque on now. Sometimes I wear the chapeau, baseball hats. I need that fedora that the Bruins got Willie. That was a sweet, and no, there is no question that David Pastrnak was involved in the design and execution of that, because that was sharp.
Willie wears a nice fedora. He always has a fedora on. Yeah, you know,
that's
a very well dressed man.
This is signature.
Yeah, he's a very.
By the way, speaking of well dressed man, I don't know if you watched TNT last night, the Ranger game. You were at the Ranger game, so you probably didn't watch. But the late game was Colorado. And they had video of the boys getting off the bus. And, you know, they do this all the time now for the suits. Who's got the good suit game? Nazem Kadri had a good suit game. The best suit game? The PR guy.
Oh,
Brendan McNichols. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Brendan's got style. He is one of the most stylish people in the National Hockey League, without question.
If I was the players, I'd be pretty upset, man, because he was stealing some serious thunder last night. Although he had the really short pants, the ones that show the ankles and the socks.
Yeah.
Big rage now. I don't get it.
Well, they're not for you.
They were floods when I was a kid.
Yeah, they're not for you and me.
Well, nothing fashionable is for me. So I'm not worried about that. But I'm just saying, as a viewer, as a fashion critic, the really short pants, I just don't understand. When I was a kid, you tried to avoid them because people would always ask you, where's the flood, right? Because you wore your pants for too long. You got too tall and they grow it up on you and people want to know where the flood was. But I guess they're really fashionable now. And I'm telling you, man, you got to go back and see the clip. Even Biz was, Paul Bissonnette was like, oh boy.
Yeah.
So
he's got style. That guy's got style. You know who's got style too? We'll talk about him next week. Henrik Lundqvist is going to get his jersey number retired by the Rangers next Friday. So we'll have that on the podcast, the conversation about that on the podcast next week. But until then, Sean, everybody enjoy the hockey and stay safe.